Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 5, Narada's teachings to Vasudeva, text number 17. Ita Atma Hano Shanta Agyane Jnanamaninaha Siddhantya Kritya Kritya Vai Kaladvastha Manorataha Siddhanti, they suffer. Akrita, failing to perform.
Kritya,
their duty.
By
indeed.
Kala,
by time. Dvasta,
destroyed.
Manarataha,
Manarataha,
their fanciful desires. Killers of the soul are never peaceful because they consider that human intelligence is ultimately meant for expanding material life. Thus neglecting their real spiritual duties, they are always in distress. They are filled with great hopes and dreams, but unfortunately these are always destroyed by the inevitable march of time. Purport. There is a similar verse in Sri Krishna Upanishad, text 3. Asuriya namate loka andhena namasa vitaha tamste pritya vigatschanti ye ke chat mahano janaha. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Om janatine namasya janjana salakaya chakshurun vitamdina tasmaye Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Vishnam Stam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Vidatitva Vidantikam Bhukam Karoti Vachalam Pankum Lankaya Tekarim Yatri Pata Mahamande Shri Kundi Natarinam. Atmahanaha, killers of the self. So, in the previous verse, references to persons who are enjoying the results of their pious activities and who are enjoying material objects. And because their life is relatively comfortable, certainly they're in a better position than those who are suffering as a result of their impious activities. So it appears as if they're in a better position. But unfortunately, as a result of their material prosperity, they are lulled into a false sense of security. And whilst they may be enjoying the results of their previous pious deeds, in the process they're committing more sinful activities. And so then the consequences, the outcomes of such behaviours is disastrous. And so it is interesting because in the previous verse it actually mentions, you know, that that people who perform impious activities are more likely to seek shelter of the devotees than those who are actually materially pious, because they're suffering. And those who are not suffering but are enjoying material prosperity while they're in a better position because of their pious activities, they're not in a better position in one sense, because it doesn't occur to them that their future is questionable and that their current material prosperity is only temporary. So this is why it is called Atmahana. They're killing themselves by material pursuits and enjoying material pleasures. They're neglecting their most valuable resource. They're able to cash in on their good karma. They're able to cash in on their good karma. But that good karma, as it was described yesterday, as we were discussing yesterday, is actually not really good, because there are reactions even for good karma. Birth, death, old age, disease. The sufferings of material existence endure. And because of the simple activities that they perform, their future is not bright. The future is not bright. So the end result of these behaviours is they are pulled down by the weight of their bad karma. They're enjoying the good karma, but as in the process, they're performing activities which are going to drag them down. And so therefore, this verse from the Upanishad is relevant. Asuryanamati loka. So for the asuras, because basically, you know, those in mode of passion, they ignore the reality of the realities of existence. They're consumed by material desires, consumed pretty much by the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. And so they engage in activities which basically degrade them. They won't listen to good advice. They can't listen to good advice because their intelligence is clouded by material contamination, by the modes of material nature, passion and ignorance specifically. They, as Prabhupada points out in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, they may create their own religious systems. They elevate basically material men to positions of divinity. But their speculations and their mental creations don't actually benefit them. They don't actually make any spiritual progress, even though they may perform so-called religious activities in the name of spirituality. So the end result for such persons is ultimately to be cast into the different lower planetary systems, or into the animal species. This is the end result. And then, of course, you know, in the animal species or in the lower planetary, enjoying the lower planetary systems, they actually have to struggle for existence. So, you know, there are two types of people, the asuras and the suras, basically the devotees and the demons. However, amongst the demons, there may also be those who can be classified as innocent. They're engaging in demonic behaviours, demonic activities. But by good association, they can just as easily engage in activities that are beneficial for them. You know, there are some who are just tarred, you know, dyed in the wool demons. And so it doesn't matter what kind of association they get, they still remain demons. There are people like that. But then there are those who are, by association, demonic, but when they come into the association of the devotees, they can actually change their nature. Not everybody is fixed in their position. And of course, then, as I mentioned yesterday, we have the interesting situation where you find people who are both devotees and demons at the same time. They're attracted to devotional service, but they're also attracted to the allurements of the material energy, Maya, in other words. That's Maya's job. Maya has the task of bewildering the devotees. She basically has all, there's the Avaranatmika Shakti of Maya, which keeps all of those who are illusioned by the material energy completely under illusion. And so they're happy being an illusion, and if you try to disturb them, then they get upset. There's the Avaranatmika Shakti of Maya. Very powerful. You know, you see the hogs in Vrindavan lying in a stinky cesspool of just stool, basically. And he's wagging his tail. Boy, I'm having a great time here. Huh? And yet we look at the pig and the hog and we think, what are you doing, you idiot? I got a pig one couple of years ago when we went to Govardhan. I got a classic picture of a hog just lying in the middle of a whole pile of garbage that's just been swept up off the street. And you know, in India the garbage is pretty stinky. But yeah, he's just lying there. Having a snooze in the garbage pit. And they just swept up all the rubbish off the street and put it in a pile. And then, so that's Maya's shakti, potency. You know, the living entity actually is a transcendental spiritual being that is beyond the material realm. And it's described in the Bhagavatam how there are the different types of birds. You know, there's the crows and the swans. The crows like to inhabit filthy places, but the swans like to live in clean environment where the water is clear, and there are flowers, and the atmosphere is very sattvic, if you like. And the crows are pretty much in the mind of ignorance. So, you know, the living entity in its constitutional position is disgusted by, you know, the filthy conditions of the rubbish tip. But in their conditioned state, the hog thinks, ah, the rubbish tip is a great place. But that's the power of Maya, the Avaranatmika Shakti that covers over the living entity and keeps him happy, even in a filthy situation. You know, the Prabhupada gives the example, if there's a worm in stool and you try to pull him out, and he just goes back into the stool. So, the Avaranatmika Shakti keeps the living entity covered, satisfied in whatever state of illusion they happen to be in. And then there's the Prakshatmika Shakti, which is a special Shakti that Maya has for the devotees, and which is designed to pull them away from devotional service. And so Maya, you know, is, Prabhupada gives the example, like the fire attracts the moth, right? The light of the fire is very attractive, but of course the fire is deadly. But the moth is attracted by the flickering flames and the light of the fire. And so it flies towards it, mesmerized by the attractiveness of the flame. Of course, what happens when the moth flies into the flame? Burnt up. So Maya is like that. That she has a shakti desire to basically attract those who are inclined to liberation, to get out of the influence of the material energy. And basically, although it's a thankless task, it's her job to test the devotees. And one might wonder, how is that beneficial? Well, it's beneficial in the sense that one, being attracted to the material energy and avoiding or ignoring or neglecting one's devotional activities, then has to suffer. Right? So it's a form of, it's a lesson, basically. Maya teaches the devotees to remain strictly adherent to the practice and the process of devotional service by basically attracting us and revealing our weaknesses and then punishing us for our misbehaviour. Right? Just so in this way, might actually help the devotees in that regard, teaching us the reality of being bewildered by material existence. Underlines then the necessity for good association, basically. Good association. Because in good association, one is encouraged to stick to the process of devotional service without deviation. Krishna mentions that one's recommended to engage in devotional service without deviation. But Maya attracts us and bewilders us and then bashes us up, teaching us a lesson. So in the association of devotees, we learn or we become enthused by the good example, by the good association. We become strengthened by that association and become enlivened in our practice of devotional service. We will be tested by the material energy. But by remaining in the association of devotees and by being faithful or strict or adherent to the process of devotional service, one actually makes spiritual advancement so that one's able to give up the lower taste by experiencing a higher experience, a higher taste, basically. What's that verse? Was it Vishayadi Nivartante Niraharasya Dehina? What's the next line? Rasabhajatma Sokyasya Param Drishtva Nivartante. So we think that we'll get a higher taste by following Maya's beckoning call. Please come and enjoy with me. But the temporary pleasure of engaging in Maya's enticements is far outweighed by the suffering that comes about as a result. But still, the living entity, unfortunately, is in a conditioned state, is forgetful. We're forgetful. That's one of the reasons why we need to stay in the association of the devotees. If being in the association of the devotees, we're reminded, constantly reminded, of the necessity to engage in Krishna service. But Maya will test us. It's her responsibility to test us. And in testing us, she reveals our weaknesses. But in the association of the devotees, we can actually overcome the weaknesses by taking advantage of the mercy of the devotees, and the mercy of devotional service, and ultimately the mercy of Krishna. Her Prabhupada gives the example of how individually each one of us is like a little stick, easily broken. But if we're in this, if we remain in the association of devotees, then we're like a bunch of little sticks. If you try to get a bunch of little sticks and break them, it is very difficult to do. It is recommended that we stay in the association of devotees. And in that association, we are able to then more readily withstand the influence of Maya. The influence, basically, of the modes of material nature, and specifically the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. So, the devotees generally, the devotees specifically engage in the process of devotional service, and their business is to see that others also are engaged in the process of devotional service, so that they'll be able to give up the asuric mentality and take up the process of the devas, of the demigods. Prabhupada quotes that verse that we chant in the beginning of when we start our deity worship. What's that? Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. That's another one. Om Pavitra Pavitra Vah. No. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. Sada Pasyanti Surayaho. The path of devotional service has its aim, the abode of Lord Vishnu. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. It's the supreme abode. And the path of attaining that supreme abode is illuminated like the sun. So the devas or the demigods pursue the path of devotional service, which leads basically to illumination or enlightenment. And becoming enlightened themselves, they then work hard also to then create opportunities for others to make progress in devotional service. The devotees have their aspirations in making advancement in devotional service. The materialists have their aspirations in making progress in material existence. But as is pointed out here in this verse, their aspirations will be dashed. They are filled with great hopes and dreams, but unfortunately these are always destroyed by the inevitable march of time. So the devotees act in a way, preach basically, to explain to the materialistic people how their efforts for material advancement are basically doomed to failure, and they encourage people to take up the path of devotional service, which is the path of illumination, the path of real advancement. You know, materialistic people are not able to appreciate the benefits that accrue from devotional service. The benefits that accrue from devotional service, even if one's not successful as a devotee. Krishna explains that in the sixth chapter, also in the second chapter, that the benefits of performing devotional service are carried over from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime. The benefits that we get from pursuing material advancement are destroyed at the end of this lifetime, and at the beginning of the next, we have to start all over again. So those who become fully absorbed in material pursuits are doomed to failure, and as a result of their sinful activities, as explained here, they have to take birth again in the lower planetary systems, or take birth as an animal, basically. But even a little advancement on the path of devotional service ensures that one is free from the greatest fear. Of course, Prabhupada explains that their greatest fear is to fall down into the less than human species. So even a little advancement for the devotees ensures that in the next life, one will be able to take up from where one left off and then continue making advancement in the process of devotional service. So even for a devotee who has some difficulties, and of course, you know that almost everybody, even if there's some difficulty in devotional service, still there's a benefit from engaging in the process. And of course, you know, the more we stay in the association of devotees, the more we stick to the rigid practice of devotional service, then the less the problems become. Or, if there are problems, Krishna is simply revealing to us our frailties or our weaknesses, and is giving us, through the agency of Maya, is giving us an opportunity to realise those areas where we need to make improvement, and gives us an opportunity then to make advancement by revealing those parts of our character, those areas of our devotional service where we are lacking. It's actually Krishna's mercy also. So the intelligence of a living entity is not meant for expanding material life, but rather our intelligence is meant to be turned within and focused on expanding our Krishna consciousness and expanding our devotional service so that we're actually making progress. So the vision of a devotee is not so much in the external material world, but rather the vision of a devotee is internal and is focused on removing the unwanted material motivations and looking for ways to expand and increase their devotional service. That's the benefit of taking up the association of the devotees. Because it can be painful too, because in that association then one's weaknesses are revealed. But rather than see that as an obstacle, the devotees are actually trying to see, even in difficulties, the benefits for making spiritual advancement. So a devotee is practiced actually in seeing Krishna's hand within everything. And that Krishna makes arrangements for us to make progress even in difficult circumstances. So the devotees relish the challenges that come in pursuit of devotional service, appreciating that they increase one's opportunities for rendering service and increase opportunities for making advancement and removing the unwanted, the anattas, or the unwanted attachments to material things, to material existence. And in that way they're always making advancement, whereas for those who are pursuing material endeavours, hoping to make material gains, basically these verses describe how for them there is no benefit There's no progress, actually. And that even though we see it in modern society, people appear to be enjoying and making progress, living comfortably, being in a privileged position, but actually, as it is pointed out here in the Bhagavatam and by this verse from the Upanishad, even though those persons appear to be comfortable now, their behaviour is such that in the future they'll be brought down. So actually they're not in a beneficial position. They're only in a temporarily while they're living off the, you know, the bank balance of their previous good karma. They're actually whittling it away, and it's being eroded, until finally it runs out, and then the reactions of the past misdeeds kick in, and then they have to be put into a suffering situation. So the devotees recognize that, and so their concern is, okay, let us give people an opportunity to engage in activities which will free them from those reactions and give them an opportunity to actually make some spiritual advancement. Even if they're engaged in sinful activities, and even if they're not receptive, they think of ways to make people receptive so that they can make progress. It's good for those who preach, as Krishna says, there's no one more dear to me than he who teaches his message of the Bhagavad Gita to the devotees. So Krishna is pleased by the efforts of those devotees who make it their business to give others an opportunity to make some spiritual advancement, even if they're eventually disqualified. Even if they're completely disqualified, as we see, it's very difficult to preach. Not everybody is receptive. But the devotees think of ways. How to engage the conditioned soul in such a way so they'll make advancement, so they'll make progress. Chanting Hare Krishna, distributing books, you know, these things, distributing prasadam. Ostensibly, it doesn't appear as if anything is happening. It doesn't look like any progress is being made. But simply by that association of the devotees, people gradually are being purified. We can see that. In our experience, we can see that. How people gradually being purified by the association of the devotees, by that agyata sukriti. Agyata sukriti means creating the pious activities for those who are in ignorance. They're not aware that those activities are actually purifying them. So therefore it's called agyata, they're lacking knowledge. But still it's sukriti, it's pious activities. So they actually get the benefit of it. So simply by hearing the chanting of Hare Krishna, people get benefited from it, even if they don't recognize it. By taking prasadam, by reading literature. In this way, the devotees are actually creating the good fortune, the piety, if you like. Prabhupada gives the example, it's like, you know, the living entity is originally a spiritual spark, and a spark may fall out of the fire. So, you know, in our original spiritual position, we're in the fire of devotional life, in the fire of spiritual life. But on occasion, a spark may fall out of the fire. This is an example that Prabhupada gives, actually. So, you know, it sort of indicates that it is possible for the living entity to fall out of the spiritual world. Otherwise, why would he give that example? But he says that the spark may fall out of the fire and land in dirt. And it'll glow for some time, but then go out. Or the spark may fall out of the fire and into, say, water. And then what happens then? Completely out. It's extinguished immediately. Right? And then the spark may fall out of the fire and land in some dry grass and immediately you know, there's some combustion.
Flames.
Flames, yes. So Prabhupada says, he gives the example actually, that this is the living entity falling out of the fire, falling onto the, into the water, is like the living entity falling into the mud of ignorance, and then his identity is extinguished and imperceptible. Just like, you know, the living entity in the form of a tree. You know, you don't get much personality in a tree when you think about it. We know the living entity is there, but how much life does a tree demonstrate? Not a lot. Whereas if you see the living entity in the animal species, for example, then you see a lot more personality. Say, for example, in the body of a dog, for example. People who have dogs actually talk to their dogs. Right? And the dog communicates back. You know, you actually can perceive the personality in a dog. Although, you know, from the spiritual point of view, the full spiritual potential is not existent in the character of a dog. In a human form of life, however, the potential for spiritual advancement is full. Right? So in a human form of life, one can actually make full advancement to the point of self-realization. Whereas in the other species, like in the species of the plant, say for example, and amoebas and very low, it's hard to see even the personality. In the animal species we see personality, but it is not developed enough. Whereas in the human species of life we've got full opportunity to make spiritual progress. So anyway, the spark falls out into the water, this mode of ignorance is extinguished. The spark falls out on the ground and remains glowing for some time, that's considered to be the mode of passion. But eventually it goes out. Because the mode of passion usually degrades into the mode of ignorance. Whereas where the spark falls out of the fire into combustible material, that's considered to be the living entity falling into or under the influence of the mode of goodness. And in the mode of goodness, one can reignite one's spiritual identity. Right. So, you know, the devotees try to create an environment where people's spiritual life can be reignited, especially in the human form of life. That's where we concentrate mainly. You know, there's not a lot of benefit in, say, doing prasadam distribution to the animals, because it's going to take some time before they, you know, can take advantage of it. So therefore we concentrate on it. And the other example that Prabhupada would give in preaching, you know, for this Gyata Sakriti is he would give the example of a spark falling into grass. When the spark falls into wet grass, then it goes out. So that's, you know, people in the mode of ignorance. The spark may fall into partially dry grass, it may ignite, but then it still goes out. Whereas when the grass is fully dried and the spark falls into the grass, then you get a bushfire. Bushfire season's coming up actually, when it gets hot enough. Actually, I think the forecast for tomorrow is 37. So, be prepared. Because it doesn't take much. Although I notice in Victoria they're still quite green. But anyway, people are like grass. And the drier they become, everyone says, the more favourable they are to Krishna consciousness. And the way we dry them out, if you like, is by book distribution, by prasadam distribution, by chanting Hare Krishna. And we can see that the results of our preaching is such that in this day and age, actually many people are very favourable with Krishna consciousness. So we can understand they're drying out, they're getting to the dry stage. And so we can take advantage of that. As Prabhupada says, you know, you test one grain of rice in a pot of rice that's been cooked, you can understand when one's cooked, then the rest of it's cooked. So we see that in our preaching, where many people are actually very favourable. When the devotees are chanting Hare Krishna, when they're distributing prasadam, doing book distribution, then we meet many favourable people. So we're in a situation where we can encourage people, even though they may be somewhat inclined towards asuric behaviour. Still, there are those who, by the association of the devotees, have become purified. Gradually, they become more and more inclined. And so when they get an opportunity to engage in devotional service, then they're able to actually take it up. So therefore the devotees, they're engaged in thinking how to create opportunities so that even the asuric people can be benefited. Through the preaching of Krishna consciousness. And the more we create opportunities, the more people become purified, the greater potential there is for them to make progress. Even though it's slow, it's gradual. Still, we should understand that every time somebody gets an opportunity to associate with the devotees, that actually has a huge impact and helps that person to make further progress in devotional service. Every time. Even though it may appear to be an insignificant thing, it has an effect. And the effect is accumulative. That Agyata Sukriti is accumulative. So when Haridas Thakur was approached by Lord Chaitanya, and he was saying, you know, how will we elevate the conditioned souls of Kali Yuga because they're so contaminated? And he said, you know, simply by chanting Hare Krishna, even the unconscious living entities in the bricks and in the stones and in the, you know, everybody's benefited by that simple activity. You know, it might appear that we're not making any progress, but actually it's imperceptible, but gradually, and over time, as we keep up the effort, that people become more and more favourable, more and more supportive, and gradually they're making progress towards Krishna. That's the potency of devotional service. We're making progress, even though we may have some difficulties. The difficulties are actually beneficial for us because they make us realise, you know, well, I'm not a Paramahamsa, not the great Paramahamsa that I thought I was. And that helps then for us to be humble, which is the real quote, you know, vidya vinaya sampane. A quality of somebody who's actually knowledgeable is that they're humble. Right. This is an ornament of a learned person is their humility. A person may present themselves as being very learned, but if they're puffed up, then it's sort of like they two don't go together. So the difficulties are not bad because they teach us to be humble and recognize our fallen condition. And how much we're actually dependent upon Krishna. And so that way devotional service, especially in the stage of anatta nivritti, is beneficial, even though it may be difficult. It's for our purification. And similarly also, the preaching, even though it appears to be going slowly, it looks like we're never ever going to make any progress, or that the progress is very slow, still actually imperceptibly it's having its effect. It's gradually improving the situation. Does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, Tim.
Just a comment about my life versus focus.
A comment?
Yeah, a comment.
On verses like this.
Yeah, I like verses like this because they just sort of sum up, you know, material life. So
material life.
Accurate, yeah.
Yeah. You like that?
Yeah. Spot on, anyway.
Good. That's a comment. He said he likes these verses because they clearly underline the reality of material existence and how it's not beneficial. Anything else? Yes, Mahmoud.
You know, Prabhupada said that we are pure spiritual.
Yes.
We can never be happy in the material
world. No.
Never.
Like a fish out of water. You can have a Rolls Royce, a big cigar, beautiful women, lots of money in the bank, but all a fish wants is to get back in the water. The thing is, Maya is very tricky. She makes us think you can be happy here with a cigar and a Rolls Royce and money in the bank. Huh? But actually our experience is that those things are not pleasurable or satisfying.
But the fish is very lucky in the sense she loses life, but we still want to live. The problem is we still want to linger on, even in the difficulty that such comes in. But the fish just quits.
I guess so. That's an interesting analogy. I've not heard that one before, but anyway. Okay, let's finish here.